In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Back in my MBA days, I took a fascinating class on business strategy. How you compete, how you improve, how you win. One of the main takeaways as to why businesses fail is because management is too often afraid to ask the hard questions. And you have to ask the hard questions to arrive at what the professor called the brutal truth. It's the brutal truth because it means getting to the true reality of how well your business is doing or how likely it will do in the future. For example, do your customers truly prefer you, or is there just no real alternative? If the latter, no real alternative, that means you're vulnerable. A slightly better alternative product or service could wipe out your business. That's brutal. You have to ask the hard questions to get to the honest, gut-wrenching truth. Just how competitive are we? You have to ask these questions because if the truth really is brutal, then you need to make changes, and fast, before the brutal truth becomes the brutal reality. But people and organizations don't like to change. There's psychological safety in not changing, even when the house is burning down around you. In fact, in business management studies, there's an entire field of study dedicated to change management. You know the saying, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. So that brings me to today's topic, the Oregon Republican Party. Are you satisfied with the Oregon Republican Party? If you are, then why aren't they winning? It's been 30 years since they've won the governor's race. Why is that? Is the problem the voters or the message? If you're not satisfied, then what needs to change? How do you do it? Is it time to change how candidates are selected? Does the party need more control or less? On today's show, we'll ask two people who have unique perspectives. Our second guest will be Sam Carpenter, who ran as a Republican candidate for governor during the primary. We'll get his thoughts and what he saw from a candidate's perspective. You might be surprised at how little the party is actually involved, not just with his campaign, but any candidate. Candidates who will bear the label Republican in the general election. But now I'd like to welcome Jane Carroll back to the show. She is a longtime political consultant and radio show host in the Portland area. Jane, it's good to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
Yeah, give our audience your news site for your podcast.
TheJaneCarrollShow.com or .net.
And you're on Mondays and Thursdays?
Yes, and with varying schedules and precautions, you can listen to all the shows at that website at your leisure.
Yes, that's always definitely a nice feature of podcasting. Sometimes you can't catch a show live, but you can always catch it afterwards. So here we are in 2018. Let's talk about Newt and the aftermath of his loss there. We'd predicted his strategy of alienating Republicans in hopes of bringing Democrats and non-affiliated voters over was bound to lose, and that we predicted that he would lose between 5 and 7. He lost by 6. In your opinion, was there any way for Newt to win, or was he running the wrong campaign strategy from the start?
Well, I think he – I don't know if there's any way for him to be win, to be honest. I think I don't think the climate in Oregon is right now. I mean, clearly it was a devastating night for anybody that was to the middle or to the right of center. It was a Democrat sweep. It was a devastating night. So the fact that Newt remained competitive – the question to me is whether it will win the argument that in order to win statewide, you have to win a Democrat light or a moderate Republican. I think that didn't work out, but I'm not sure if a conservative Republican would have done any better in this particular climate right now in Oregon.
I kind of think that somebody that was leaning conservative, probably would have done better than Newt. And the reason I say that is, with a lot of qualifiers is how I'm saying that. I think you have to have that celebrity star factor that will attract people over, because I don't think Democrats are prone to vote for Republicans unless they've got some kind of celebrity status attached to them. We saw that with Chris Dudley. And we saw that down in California with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't think that they're inclined to pull the trigger for a Republican unless there's some other reason to do that. The other qualifier to that, too, I think, is that you have to have a Republican who's not a scary, diehard conservative. And I think that might have done better. So, but, you know, as we've talked so often in the past, is that a lot of politics, it's not the Queen Mary. You can't turn things on a dime. So you have to have somebody that's a conservative, but not scary, and also somebody that's not, you know, really far to the right on, in terms of conservative values, but just kind of introduce people to the fact that, you know, being conservative has some really good appeals to it. You get more money, you have more job opportunities, and on down the list of all the things that Republicans stand for and that Republican policies promote. I mean, look at what has happened on the national scene with Trump in office. And, you know, granted, of course, he's maybe not the best example in terms of scary Republicans, but even so. So anyway, in terms of maybe putting the nail in the coffin for this left of moderate, do you think that has finally been killed?
No. I think the consultant class in Oregon firmly believes that's the way to go. And I think they're going to find excuses. They're going to say, look, it just was a terrible year for anything that was not a Democrat or even far left. It was a terrible year. Kate Brown is a horrible candidate. She is not a popular governor, and we couldn't beat her.
Yeah.
So maybe you needed to be, but she had a lot of money. She had a lot of power. I think the D by her name probably was enough to do it in this climate.
It may have been, yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, like you say, she was very unpopular. I'm not sure Newt would have done as well as he did against her if she wasn't so unpopular. But
nor do I.
Yeah, I kind of am in the same boat as you, is that I tend to think that the political class that tries to put these people forward, I think they're going to say, well, we need somebody even more far left than Newt was, and that's my fear.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure the more far left candidate in the Republican Party is going to be able to kind of garner the money Newt Bueller did. And he was an impressive fundraiser, and it was a coalition of people really sort of were buying some of the fine print that you and I never really bought into, that he was either ahead or dead even with her. I never felt that.
No, I didn't either. So the other thing that we have is that Newt did win the majority of counties. I think it was something like 29 of 36, and if that number is correct, that's 81% of counties. But we've got a situation here in Oregon, and like we do in a lot of other states, where Portland, Eugene, Corvallis, and Medford, they are usually the ones that select our candidates, and they select the winners in statewide races as well. Unless we were to shift to some sort of electoral college style system, the cities are always going to outvote the rural. So how do Republicans in general and conservative ideals in particular begin to appeal to the urban areas?
Well, I think that there are people in the urban areas that clearly, I'm one of them. I live in Portland, but I am a distinct minority. I think the issue was, and I haven't studied this yet, Mark, perhaps you have, but the 29 counties that are red, and geographically it looks disproportionately, like most of the country looks, is votes for Republicans, but that's not where the population centers are, is I think they don't vote in places like Oregon in large enough numbers because they don't think they matter. And this validates it. This reinforces that. And we keep telling them, if you show up and vote, you can make a difference. But the early numbers out of Multnomah County had Kate Brown up by 130,000 votes.
Yeah.
It was over.
Yeah, it pretty much was. Yeah. And unfortunately, if you think your vote doesn't matter and you don't vote, guess what? Your vote doesn't matter. All right, let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with Jane Carroll. We will be talking about Oregon's Democrat supermajority and the failure on some of those ballot measures. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Jane Carroll, talking about the aftermath of the election and going to be digesting not only what happened, but also maybe how we start going about fixing all of this. Jane was a longtime radio host in the Portland area. You can find her now on the net, and that's just simply the janecarrollshow.net or .com. Either one of those will direct to the site, and she has a live podcast Mondays and Thursdays, but you can always download those if you missed the show and listen to them at your convenience. So we lost three House seats and one Senate seat here in Oregon. The Republicans did to the Democrats. The only saving grace is we have Betsy Johnson in there who is still in the Senate, maybe able to help stop some really horrible ideas on new taxes and gun rights. What do you see coming down the pike with this new supermajority?
Oh, I think we've got a supermajority. They can pass anything they want. They Kate Brown will sign them. I see things like cap and tax going through. I see nothing happening with the retirement spurs. I see nothing being done at schools that the teachers union doesn't mandate or want. I really see our business climate in Oregon is already horrific, yet we talked about this before the election, Mark. I actually think because the good Trump economy, I think incumbents benefited.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so, too. You know, one of the things that really concerned me was the ballot measure that did pass, and that was the one that opened it to counties and municipalities to start offering bonds for affordable housing. I am very worried about that because you already have a situation where the state is abusing the bond situation, allowing them to borrow and put themselves into debt beyond the balanced budget that is mandated by our own constitution, and yet we're horribly abusing that bond situation. And now you've got a situation where cities and counties may be putting themselves deeper and deeper into debt. We haven't been able to get out of PERS, and yet now we're opening it to have cities go into debt. What were your thoughts about that?
I've never seen, and I've seen a lot of misleading campaigns in my life, as many, the ballot titles out of the Democrat Attorney General's office were very misleading.
Yes.
Affordable housing, I think people think that's for them. What it means is you're going to subsidize other people's housing, and we won't have actual competition. If the market can't afford something, usually the people that are providing the housing are going to have to lower the cost. But no, the government's going to step in with your money to subsidize other people's and loan borrowing money. It's outrageous. And I can't tell you, Mark, how many people said, well, at least the food tax didn't pass. Yes, it did.
Yeah.
People voted no thinking they were voting no against a food tax. And in reality, because that's the way the false advertising, and they had a lot more money, was put out there, the right vote was a yes vote. If you
that's
didn't
right.
want your food taxed with under a different name, a tariff, a fee, or whatever. So they got the one sacred thing, food, that everybody agrees, even on a sales tax, et cetera, we shouldn't tax food. Is now free to be taxed by the Democrats. They can call these things anything they want and can raise our taxes.
And I think that's very scary. I think it's ushering in the door to a sales tax. I think actually we had that happen last election cycle where we passed that healthcare sales tax. And that, I think, is, you know, it's that foot in the door that the Democrats are very good at doing, is they get that foot in the door and they start we can just tax this, we can just tax that. And now we've got sales tax on food is inevitable. I think it's within 4 years, if the Republicans can't start turning this around, we will have an active sales tax because I think Democrats will have taxed everything else they possibly could tax. And that will be the only thing left. And because we know they're not going to cut spending.
No, they're not going to cut spending. They're going to add more taxes. If they do the cap and trade and tax thing, that's going to add a tremendous amount of revenue to the coffers. I think they might even be able to get away without a sales tax. Actually, I sort of hope they put a sales tax up there sooner rather than later. It's the one pariah tax that Oregonians, because they, despite them putting in Democrat incumbents and more of them, the people in Oregon, like most places, don't trust the government to keep their word. And if you, they'll say they'll replace a bunch of taxes with the sales tax, but invariably those taxes will come back and you'll have a sales tax too. That's what's always defeated the sales tax. It's a lack of trust in government. I don't think the trust in government is any better than it's ever been to pass the sales tax. I think that could be their Achilles heel, but they may not need to do with it because they've put so many taxes and got so many taxes approved that under very phony advertising and misleading. And I don't understand. I don't understand why we now have a Republican Secretary of State. These ads are deceptive. They're downright lies.
It used to be
a problem with that, but nothing happens if you lie in your advertising now. Nothing.
No, it doesn't. And they're blatant lies too. You know, I think the path forward for sales tax here in Oregon, and again, they've laid the groundwork for this. I think number one, they'll use deceptive advertising, like you say. It won't be a sales tax. It'll be like a tax on big businesses or something like that. But I think what you'll begin to see is I think you'll start seeing sales taxes on a county by county basis. Yeah, because they've already opened that door with the bonding issues for affordable housing. So now they're going to pass an excise tax or something else. People don't even understand what an excise tax is. So they'll start opening that up on a county by county basis. That's what they have in New York, where Manhattan and some of the downstate counties all have sales taxes that are higher than the rest of it. And then the other counties will start saying, well, gee, Multnomah County is making a lot of money with a sales tax. Maybe we need to start doing that here, too. I think that's the path that we'll see.
Yeah, and they'll do it like they did with the food tax. People thought they were voting against a food tax if they voted no. In reality, they were voting for the government to be able to tax food or anything else, really, if they want. It just was very I heard from so many people who said, well, at least that went down.
And they just didn't understand. It really is unfortunate. All right, let's go and take a break. Coming back, we're going to be talking with Jane Carroll. She is a longtime campaign manager and consultant for many political ballot measures, but also candidates as well. We'd like to get her opinions on how we start fixing all of this. Stay with us. This is iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Jane Carroll. She is the host of The Jane Carroll Show, which you can find on the internet at thejanecarrollshow.net, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. So Jane, you have been around politics for a long time. You've been a campaign manager, and we'd really like to get your thoughts on how we start fixing this. You know, I have used this analogy before, that in the private sector, Coca-Cola doesn't hire salesmen and let them go out and sell Pepsi. We as Republicans consistently seem to have a Republican salesman, in other words, candidates out there selling Pepsi. Except in this last election, Newt wasn't just selling Pepsi. He was constantly saying how bad Coke was and that it would kill you. In terms of changes, is it time to start changing how we select Republican candidates with maybe more party control over who gets to wear the label Republican?
I don't think that's going to – reforming the party and how we select candidates, that's I don't think that's going to solve the problem. I think – first of all, you have to look at this thing. And it was a disaster in Oregon. It was just when the minutes the poll closed, it was just more bad news after more bad news. But it's a midterm election. And midterm elections, you and I did discuss, if Trump was the X factor in the races that were won on a national rate. Mm-hmm. He's been told he's not even welcome in Oregon by the candidates that ran in the same year when he was running for president. So he wasn't going to come to Oregon, and he wasn't going to turn anything around. But let's face it, I think Ted Cruz wouldn't be in the Senate if against a very charismatic and possible presidential contender in Texas. Greg Abbott did not win in a landslide. The governor, the very popular Republican governor of Texas, it's a midterm. And there's some basic rules that people who in a midterm who are angry, want change. They're the ones that get mobilized, whether it's on the left or the right. That we saw that with the Tea Party movement and the midterm elections of Barack Obama.
That's a good point.
So our people may have said all these things, but they weren't in the same numbers. Plus, they have tapped into a whole bunch of new voters. Some of example in Florida, they passed letting felons vote. Florida.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to have that here soon. That's just, those are Democrat votes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they built their base, and they were mobilized, and they went to college campuses, and they worked it. We sort of just sit around and said, I hope the good economy's enough. I hope that things are going well, that Trump has had some success in foreign affairs, that despite his ways and his tweets and everything, that this is going to be people, when people are happy. But when people are happy, they don't vote in the same numbers that people that are angry. The Trump hatred worked for the left.
It did, yeah.
And we didn't have that. We didn't have that energy going on here in Oregon. And but I think if Trump is on the ballot and you've got this against the swamp, and then you have an opportunity to juxtapose we versus them. And the Democrats did a better job this time around of that. And I think the numbers, you know, we're looking at things and they're saying, oh, it's a huge, massive turnout. Well, one of the reasons we have a massive early turnout, it's a lot easier to vote early in many places than it used to be. It used to be you were just absentee, and you had to go through a process, and you had to be out of town and all that. You also have, let's face it, there's a whole bunch of people participating in the process who shouldn't be.
That's right.
And they're voting for Democrats.
Yep.
And they got them out to vote. And we see what's going on now in Florida. The other part about it is the Democrats in close elections, they make it part of their campaign strategy on how to win the recount. And we don't.
No. In fact, a lot of times we're caught very much flat-footed on that. We seem to be surprised that suddenly tens of thousands of votes materialize out of the basements of Multnomah County. In terms of fixing this, what are your thoughts in terms of how we start turning this around?
Well, I think you alluded to it earlier. You appeal to the base values of and the things that people are passionate about. And we saw that in 2016. We saw a whole bunch of people that traditionally voted Democrat voting for Trump. We saw some groups that they took for granted, women, for example, voting for Trump, that they never put into the factor. And that was because people were tired. They were tired of the left running everything. They were tired of the policies that were leading us nowhere. But quite candidly, Republicans, we talk about better candidates. We need better office holders. Yeah. We need people that when they get the opportunity to repeal and replace Obamacare, gosh darn it, they do it.
Yes.
When a wall is promised and they were on board for the wall and then they just completely go AWOL once they get in office, well, nobody keeps their promises.
Yeah.
That's problematic.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I am convinced that's why the Republicans lost the House. Is because they ran on building the wall, they ran on repealing Obamacare and on down the list, and they did none of it. In fact, not only did they not do any of it, they absolutely dug in their heels and refused to do any of it. I think that's why Republicans lost the House, because in the Senate side, you at least saw them fighting for Kavanaugh, and on the House, you saw nothing.
Right. And you saw them, they were the ones that derailed Obamacare, but, I mean, repealing it, and you know, John McCain, we owe that to him.
Yeah.
But you take a state, for example, like Arizona, which has been moving more and more to a blue state, but it's still a red state. How do you go from electing a Jeff Flake, who used to run as a conservative, now I think he's going to change his party. He's a joke.
Yeah.
But who had, you know, in the low teens approval. That's why he couldn't run for reelection. And so in a state like that, because he's not conservative enough, that he has these low approval numbers, in we elect a far left extremist, and why did that happen? Well, I do think there's some people voting that probably shouldn't be, but in reality, what happened is she ran and got away with running as a moderate. And why did she get away with it? Because McSally ran away from Trump until the last couple
yes.
of weeks of the campaign.
Yep. Well, and we saw that in Florida, too, when DeSantis suddenly started to distance himself from Trump. He started to drop in the polls, and it wasn't until he came back around to Trump that finally those numbers started to turn around. Jane, we really could talk with you all day long, but unfortunately we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time, and it's going to be a wild couple of years, that's for sure.
It is, but I have hope for 2020. I really do.
I do,
I think people are going to be passionate, and when people are passionate, they vote.
Yes, absolutely. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the aftermath of Oregon's election and what we can be doing to fix things. We'd like to get some thoughts now from a candidate's viewpoint. And to do that, I'd like to welcome now Sam Carpenter. He is a successful businessman and business consultant from the Bend area. And he is also a former Republican candidate for governor, losing to Newt Bueller in the primary. Sam, it's great to talk to you again.
Well, thank you, Mark and Carla. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So we'd like to get your thoughts about what happened there from a candidate's viewpoint. In your experiences when you were running in the primary, did you ever feel that there was favoritism from party leaders towards one or the other of the candidates? In other words, was it fair and unbiased?
Oh, don't get me started. there's enough lessons learned along those lines that I've written a book about it that will be published on December 3rd. But yes, of course. And there is left intrusion. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but between the left's progressive left's intrusion and our Oregon Republican Party's uselessness, there was the golden child candidate, and everything that was done, vote splitting, slime campaign of lies and distortions, it all happened to take me out of the lead, which I had in the scientific polls as of April 1st. It's diabolical.
Well, looking at the end result, Newt losing by 6 points here, do you think a conservative, or at least somebody that leaned conservative, would have done better or worse than Newt did? I mean, can a conservative win in Oregon, given how much Portland controls the election and how much they loathe conservatives like Trump?
Well, let's just say we can find halfway level playing field. Then we have to look backwards. 30 years of failure in the gubernatorial races. No statewide wins, really. Dennis Richardson won Secretary of State a couple years ago, but he was a conservative. The truth is, we're told over and over, and it's in part one of my book, The 10 Myths of Blue Oregon. The first one is that this is a blue state and that it's overrun by progressives and Democrats and a conservative can never win. No, a conservative can win. The problem is they don't vote for, typically, a lot of the conservatives don't vote for a pro-choice candidate or one that doesn't follow the Oregon Republican Party platform. So the problem has been we've been presented with bad candidates, honestly.
Yeah.
A conservative is the only one who can win. Now, the people that are pushing, moving to the center and crossing the aisle and all this, they're done in this state. They're done because of a history of failure, most recently with their golden child, Newt Bueller, who was everything they wanted, and he lost. And that's because he wasn't a conservative. He lost his base, and you're never going to woo progressives away from their governor. That's never going to happen. So he's a man without a country right now. He was a man without a country in the election. And despite the $2.5 million from Phil Knight, $3.5 million from the Republican gubernatorial group, Governor's Association, $6 million extra, he still lost. And he lost against a poor governor, a governor that has made all kinds of mistakes and has been in all kinds of scandals. So even with all that, our move into the middle was, again, a mistake, leaving conservative Oregon out in the cold.
Well, I agree with you in the fact that he basically ran as Kate Light, Kate with a goatee. So I don't really see that there was any real choice there. Yeah, it is kind of scary, isn't it?
You heard all the time that the lesser of two evils, I'm going to hold my nose and vote. What kind of a way is that to win an election? Here's what you need, Mark. You need 100% of the Republican base, and you need to take 30 to 40% of the Democrats, and you need to take at least half of the independents unaffiliated. That's what wins the races. He wasn't talking to the Republicans at all. And this has happened over and over in all the elections, this moving to the center, losing your base, and the people on the other side are saying, are you kidding? You're a Republican.
Yeah.
We're never going to vote for you, and you're not offering me anything I don't
anything
have
different.
Already.
That's right. Yeah, there wasn't any real reason to vote for him. And I think his strategy of reaching out to the NAVs, the non-affiliated voters, we hear that a lot in these races, and I think it's just a mistake, because when you look at the historical turnout for NAVs, they only have turnout of around 30%. And so, yes, there's right. this huge block of, they are the second largest party block, so to speak. You got right. Democrats, mm-hmm. and then you've got NEVs, and then you have Republicans, but the NEVs just don't vote. And so a strategy like Newt's around reaching out to NEVs is just never going to work because they only have 30% turnout.
Exactly right.
So,
and what didn't happen is there wasn't excitement. There wasn't excitement, and down ballot suffered all the way down to the local level.
Absolutely.
We need excitement that will get those unaffiliated and independents, and a lot of the Democrats who are disgusted with what's going on to come over and say, "Wow, I got to look at that." It's not about a Republican or a Democrat, and that isn't the war going on now, as you know. It's really the country class versus the ruling class being Republicans and Democrats, trying to make things go and hold on. And for the Republican Party, they're about 10%.
Yeah.
90% of the Republican Party in five separate scientific polls we found were 89% in support of our president.
Yes, and they need to be
addressed.
Newt did everything he could to alienate Republicans. I thought, I think let's go ahead and take a break there. We're only got about a minute here, and this is a long question, so let's do that when we come back.
Okay,
we're talking with Sam Carpenter. He ran in the Republican primary for governor, and we'll get his thoughts on how we start fixing this from a candidate's viewpoint. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today about the aftermath of the Oregon election here. And in this segment, we're talking about how we start fixing these things. And we're beginning a candidate's viewpoint on that. We're talking today to Sam Carpenter. He's a successful businessman and business consultant from Bend. You can find him on Facebook. Just search for Sam Carpenter, Make Oregon Great Again. And you can also head to his website, makeoregongreatagain.com. And we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. You know, Sam, we were talking about conservatives and having conservatives run for office on a statewide basis. And I think a lot of what you had faced and what Republicans in general face is that Democrats continue to control the media. They control the culture. They control the narratives that Republicans are evil and Democrats are good, kind, caring folks who want nothing more than to give you free stuff that you have a right to. And this matters when you have a vast majority of voters who are not political junkies and couldn't tell you one single policy that a candidate stands for. How do you make conservative ideas and conservative candidates less scary to voters who don't know what even conservatives stand for?
Okay, and let me make a couple of quick points here. The problem with voter, if we want to call it voter apathy, is on both sides, probably 50% on both sides. The other thing is we need to make a distinction for Democrats between progressives and regular Democrats. And I say progressives hold about 30% of the Democrat vote. The other 70% are people just like you and me. The struggles on the street, the struggles with their kids and at their jobs and so forth. They're reasonable people. Progressives are unreasonable people. Okay. Now, what needs to happen is we have to stop. Having said that, we have to stop going, "I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, I'm a Republican." And of course, and this sounds, you hear it all the time, we really do have to talk about the issues that affect everybody. And what we need to do is maybe pick five issues and concentrate on those. And these would be issues that would affect everybody, like the filth in downtown Portland, like the homelessness. And so what we need to do to get people excited is talk about things that affect their lives. After all, politicians are the employees of the electorate, and the electorate wants to know what you're going to do, and they have to be convinced. And that's kind of my answer to your question. I hope that is what you were looking for.
It is, and I think a lot of it just simply comes down to messaging, if I can just reflect what you're saying. Let's take a look at what happened and what could be done to improve things for other future candidates. In other words, we'll get your thoughts as a former candidate, what needs improvement to make the process of running for office easier, better, and more successful. Having run for office, is there any one thing that really stands out that you think, wow, if we had done X, that would really have made the process of running for candidate a lot better?
Well, within my campaign, of course, we made a few small mistakes. I made a bad I made a bad answer in the Lars Larson debate. I got half my answer out and my 40 seconds was up. But overall, here's the thing. Here's the problem that we have as Republicans is the Oregon Republican Party. Now, just very briefly in this campaign, here are three things that happened. We had 10 candidates in the gubernatorial. Eight of them were unqualified or in there for the wrong reason. And five of them didn't raise any money. One raised $160 and the other one raised $8,000. And then there was Wooldridge, me, and Buehler. Now, those seven candidates, those first seven, would need to be vetted by a strong ORP and talked out of running. We can't stop them from running, but they should be talked out of it. We can't have vote splitting, and this was Wooldridge, and it's in my book, and a strong ORP wouldn't allow that to happen. And he was trailing around the electorate for 5 months before he came in when I took the lead from Buehler in the scientific polls. And that was about April 1st. And then the other thing, the third thing a strong ORP would not allow is the mudslinging and the slime, $1 million slime campaign in the last 3 weeks against me by Buehler. Now, these were distortions and lies, stolen valor. Come on, you know. But anyway, what I would do if I was running the ORP, and I want to, I'm running for ORP chief here in February, is as soon as there's a slime campaign, look at it hard. Is there any truth to it? And then put a press release out if there isn't and stop it and let that candidate know there are some controls. If I was party chair, that's what I would do. None of those three things would happen in any of our contests. But we have a weak ORP.
So many times we see Republicans savaging one another's, and all that does is it ends up, you know, hurting them in the general because you're essentially writing the campaign ads for the Democrats. You know, when we first invited you on, we didn't know that you were planning on running for the ORP chairmanship. So we'll certainly talk to you about that in the next segment. But in terms of interacting with the party, how did they offer you any kinds of supports as a candidate? Do you come in and do they give you trainings? Do they say, okay, these are the steps you need to go through, this is the process? Is there any of that from a candidate standpoint?
No, and I have run for two other statewide contests, U.S. Senate. One of them I dropped out after a few weeks to support Jason Conger back in, what was it, 2014. But in none of my campaigns have I had even a single call from the ORP. There is no training. There is no nothing. And chaos is allowed to reign. It's uncontrolled. I really appreciate these people putting their time in and having an ORP and doing the things they're doing. But we need some leadership. People are not going to run for office after they watch what happened to me. Somebody needs to protect the candidate. Somebody needs to make sure there's not nine conservatives and one moderate in there, with all the conservatives splitting the vote up. So the moderate wins. That's happened over and over and over again. And if I'm chair and I have my slate, that will never happen again.
I certainly think it needs to be run more like a business. What you're describing actually fits with what I have learned. I haven't run for office myself, but it certainly fits with what I have learned from other candidates who have. There really isn't any kind of supports from the Republican Party when you decide to run. There's not a list of vendors to approach. There's not a list of campaign managers and consultants, no list of media contacts or anything like that. So it really is surprising the lack of support that you get as a candidate until you actually get through the primary. Let's go ahead and take a break because I'd like to save some more time in the last segment to get your thoughts on how we start fixing the ORP, because it sounds like that is really an impediment rather than a help right now. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Sam Carpenter after this. And welcome back. We're talking today about the aftermath of the Oregon election here. And in this segment, we're talking about how we start fixing these things. And we're beginning a candidate's viewpoint on that. We're talking today to Sam Carpenter. He's a successful businessman and business consultant from Bend. You can find him on Facebook. Just search for Sam Carpenter, Make Oregon Great Again. And you can also head to his website, makeoregongreatagain.com. And we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. You know, Sam, we were talking about conservatives and having conservatives run for office on a statewide basis. And I think a lot of what you had faced and what Republicans in general face is that Democrats continue to control the media. They control the culture. They control the narratives that Republicans are evil and Democrats are good, kind, caring folks who want nothing more than to give you free stuff that you have a right to. And this matters when you have a vast majority of voters who are not political junkies and couldn't tell you one single policy that a candidate stands for. How do you make conservative ideas and conservative candidates less scary to voters who don't know what even conservatives stand for?
Okay, and let me make a couple of quick points here. The problem with voter, if we want to call it voter apathy, is on both sides, probably 50% on both sides. The other thing is we need to make a distinction for Democrats between progressives and regular Democrats. And I say progressives hold about 30% of the Democrat vote. The other 70% are people just like you and me. The struggles on the street, the struggles with their kids and at their jobs and so forth. They're reasonable people. Progressives are unreasonable people. Okay. Now, what needs to happen is we have to stop. Having said that, we have to stop going, I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, I'm a Republican. And of course, and this sounds, you hear it all the time, we really do have to talk about the issues that affect everybody. And what we need to do is maybe pick five issues and concentrate on those. And these would be issues that would affect everybody, like the filth in downtown Portland, like the homelessness. And so what we need to do to get people excited is talk about things that affect their lives. After all, politicians are the employees of the electorate, and the electorate wants to know what you're going to do, and they have to be convinced. And that's kind of my answer to your question. I hope that is what you were looking for.
It is, and I think a lot of it just simply comes down to messaging. If I can just reflect what you're saying. Let's take a look at what happened and what could be done to improve things for other future candidates. In other words, we'll get your thoughts as a former candidate, what needs improvement to make the process of running for office easier, better, and more successful. Having run for office, is there any one thing that really stands out that you think, wow, if we had done X, that would really have made the process of running for candidate a lot better?
Well, within my campaign, of course, we made a few small mistakes. I made a bad answer in the Lars Larson debate. I got half my answer out and my 40 seconds was up. But overall, here's the thing. Here's the problem that we have as Republicans is the Oregon Republican Party. Now, just very briefly in this campaign, here are three things that happened. We had 10 candidates in the gubernatorial. Eight of them were unqualified or in there for the wrong reason. And five of them didn't raise any money. One raised $160 and the other one raised $8,000. And then there was Wildrich, me, and Bueller. Now, those seven candidates, those first seven, would need to be vetted by a strong ORP and talked out of running. We can't stop them from running, but they should be talked out of it. We can't have vote splitting, and this was Wildrich, and it's in my book, and a strong ORP wouldn't allow that to happen. And he was trailing around the electorate for 5 months before he came in when I took the lead from Bueller in the scientific polls. And that was about April 1st. And then the third thing a strong ORP would not allow is the mudslinging and the slime, $1 million slime campaign in the last 3 weeks against me by Bueller. Now, these were distortions and lies, stolen valor. Come on, you know. But anyway, what I would do if I was running the ORP, and I want to, I'm running for ORP chief here in February, is as soon as there's a slime campaign, look at it hard. Is there any truth to it? And then put a press release out if there isn't and stop it and let that candidate know there are some controls. If I was party chair, that's what I would do. None of those three things would happen in any of our contests. But we have a weak ORP.
So many times we see Republicans savaging one another's, and all that does is it ends up, you know, hurting them in the general because you're essentially writing the campaign ads for the Democrats. You know, when we first invited you on, we didn't know that you were planning on running for the ORP chairmanship. So we'll certainly talk to you about that in the next segment. But in terms of interacting with the party, how did they offer you any kinds of supports as a candidate? Do you come in and do they give you trainings? Do they say, okay, these are the steps you need to go through, this is the process? Is there any of that from a candidate standpoint?
No, and I have run for two other statewide contests, U.S. Senate. One of them I dropped out after a few weeks to support Jason Conger back in, what was it, 2014. But in none of my campaigns have I had even a single call from the ORP. There is no training. There is no nothing. And chaos is allowed to reign. It's uncontrolled. I really appreciate these people putting their time in and having an ORP and doing the things they're doing. But we need some leadership. People are not going to run for office after they watch what happened to me. Somebody needs to protect the candidate. Somebody needs to make sure there's not nine conservatives and one moderate in there, with all the conservatives splitting the vote up, so the moderate wins. That's happened over and over and over again. And if I'm chair and I have my slate, that will never happen again.
I certainly think it needs to be run more like a business. What you're describing actually fits with what I have learned. I haven't run for office myself, but it certainly fits with what I have learned from other candidates who have. There really isn't any kind of supports from the Republican Party when you decide to run. There's not a list of vendors to approach. There's not a list of campaign managers and consultants, no list of media contacts or anything like that. So it really is surprising the lack of support that you get as a candidate until you actually get through the primary. Let's go ahead and take a break, because I'd like to save some more time in the last segment to get your thoughts on how we start fixing the ORP, because it sounds like that is really an impediment rather than a help right now. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Sam Carpenter after this.